Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Bros.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. Now and live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm El Fakador Laurie Blake and I am joined by Adam Blompier.
All right.
All right, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, not bad.
We talk about dogs a lot in this edition.
Dogs.
So I hope you like dogs. Hope you like pictures being ill-described because we also do that for a little bit when we're talking about the dog mostly. Dog. So if you can imagine a corgi, start imagining a corgi now because you're going to need it. But also... Stop it.
That's great. Cool. I love corgis. And I talk about corgis loads in this episode. It's the best episode of NXT we've ever done.
It's the best episode of NXT in a long while. And that's probably because the main event between Sasha Banks and Io Shirai was blooming fantastic. And also saw Asuka return to NXT. Here's the show. First night of the Great American Bash ended up having Asuka appear from beneath the ring, I think, where she must have been hiding for quite some time, to spit goop into Sasha Banks' face, something which has been discussed multiple times and seemingly is probably still inadvisable in the current climate, but it was a cool visual and an interesting end to what was a very good main event for the show. We'll go through the rest of the show in a bit, but we'll start with talking about the main event because this was Sasha Banks versus Io Shirai for bragging rights, I guess. And as expected, Sasha Banks is going on to face Asuka at Extreme Rules for the Raw Women's Championship, so she needs to look strong.
Was it not for the NXT Women's Championship?
It was a non-title match.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I went in thinking it was for the NXT Women's Championship.
Well, because that would just make sense. The problem is they couldn't do that because they're hyping up the Sasha Two Belts thing for the Asuka match. So they just went for, this is just for fun, I get funsies for Sasha and Bayley to probably make into a very long running bit that they're going to do.
It was a lot of fun.
But we fell into the tricky trap of both people needed to look quite strong here. Io Shirai, who is the newly minted NXT champion, she needed to look strong. This is her first, like, it's not a defense, but this is like her first proper match since winning the belt, really. And then you've got Sasha Banks, who is about to go and face the Raw Women's Champion, and so needs to look strong too. So then we get into this situation towards the end of the match where they need to work out how to do that. We'll loop back round to this in a second because let's talk about the rest of the match because I thought this was easily the best thing on the show. This was so nearly like a takeover quality match. This had like 20 minutes right at the end of the show. The show itself was like a full 2 hour one. They were showing stuff in the breaks, but this was non-commercial. There were no commercials during the main event. Sponsored by.
Mountain Dew. It was their Mountain Dew main event.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought this was really, really cool. Like, Sasha came out, like, in a Jaguar F-Type with her dog in tow.
So, can we talk about the NXT debut of Ryu, who is Sasha Banks' corgi? Because, obviously, that is the main event. I'm not sure if people know this about me, but I love corgis so much, and pretty much half the people I follow on Instagram are corgi accounts. And I basically, if you don't mind, I've just prepared a little slideshow of lovely Ryu memories taken from Ryu's Twitter account. So obviously you have the big, look at him. He's just licking his own snoot there. That is obviously him being held by Bailey Two Belts and Uno Dog. There we have, look, he's wearing a little bow tie for the great American bow tie, because he's a great American boy. There's Tiny Ryu having a little nap. Isn't he sweet? There's a bit of that's either a flannel or a towel. Not cleared there. Another little nap, but fully grown Ryu. He's a big tired boy. He's probably tired from all of his days being actually Spider-Man. Look at him there. He's a little superhero puffer.
Friendly neighborhood corgi.
A little glimpse into Ryu's future here. I believe, obviously, the Hall of Fame had to be called off this year. But if not, Ryu would have been a fully fledged member. Noble boy.
There he is, having a strap match with Dexter Lumis.
Surveying his kingdom. And he's having another little nap there. He's wrestling a dinosaur, takes after his mum. And it's he's delightful. Laurie.
So yeah, I think we've worked out why Adam didn't know that this match wasn't for the NXT Championship. There we go.
Look at him. Look, he's making a little entrance there. It's delightful.
Wonderful.
Such a good boy. Oh, let's go through all the photos again. So that's
I'm very sorry, podcast listeners. This is not for you. Imagine a corgi asleep and you've seen the pictures.
Don't lump him in. That is all.
If you imagine a corgi asleep, you've seen the pictures.
Look at him. So proud and noble. And he's on a little Bailey towel. And apparently that towel was sent to him by Vince McMahon. Vince, clearly a big supporter of Ryu. Well, obviously he's being inducted into the 2020 WWE Hall of Fame. Not a lot else to talk about on this episode. So it is mostly Ryu's debut. There he is. Wearing his little bow tie again. That is him licking his own snoot. I don't think we've seen him napping yet. There he is.
Okay, good. Yep, great.
Tiny little baby.
I'm gonna leave.
That's fine. I'll replace you with this little proud. Here he is. He's so gorgeous. Oh, proud. Proud and noble. And let me forget, a Hall of Famer. Look. Little Bailey towel there, absolutely glorious, making his entrance because he's a boss dog, much like his human. Oh, he's absolutely adorable.
Okay, talk about
hi, Laurie.
Talk about the match now.
Okay,
because this was really good. This achieved the levels that the hype I think was setting up for. This when the match was announced last week, it started trending on Twitter, and I think all my expectations were met of watching Io Shirai and Sasha Banks finally like have a proper match. There was some really, really cool stuff in this. There was a really great bit where like Banks had slowed things right down and Io starts to break out of like having her arms pulled behind the back, and Io just hits these two knees to the face and then just effortlessly leaps into a head scissors that ends up in the corner with Io getting like dunked into the turnbuckle, and then this huge Frankensteiner to Sasha Banks that sends her halfway across the ring, and she's setting up a storm or incredibly hurt because she was just like arching her back and rolling around. It was really, really cool stuff. And there was a few bits where like I think kind of the ambition outstripped the fluidity in terms of like being able to nail what they wanted to do, but there was some really, really good stuff. There was like a bit of a scramble when Io did a bit of a springboard bit, but this led to a moment where Sasha did a sunset flip power bomb through the ropes, splat onto the plexiglass. Bailey loses her damn mind in the background screaming. Honestly, I couldn't be happier with this match. I just thought it was bloody brilliant until the finale, which got a bit schmuzzy, but that is the nature of attempting to keep two people looking strong. So the finish is there. Io Shirai gets Asuka into a crossface and it's locked in pretty damn tight, and they're trying to get towards the ropes when Banks is fighting off. Bailey hops into the sort of into the picture and starts trying to slide one of the women's tag team titles into the ring. But in like that really, it's like, but again, like the referee is a video game character. Just like, if I drop this here, he must be attracted to it. So it, like when you drop the porno mags in like Metal Gear Solid, it's like Yeah. He just goes, oh, that's immediately there for me. And he just grabs at it and tries to like take it away as everyone's scrambling. And as he turns around to inevitably chuck it out of the ring, Bayley dunks Io Shirai, and then Bayley runs around and starts fighting over the belt with the referee, completely distracting him. Sasha goes to get the other belt that's been left, but as she grabs that, who should appear but Asuka to hit her with the green mist, which gives Io the chance to roll up Sasha. That's a really close two. There's a big Shote palm strike, and then an Asai moonsault finishes things up. And then there's just this moment when the roll-up happens and the ref is like, yeah, well done, Io, you won. That's brilliant. And then he sort of catches Asuka and he catches Sasha's green face and he's like, oh, I effed up. I really effed up. So unfortunately, I can't overturn any decisions or anything like that. I really did mess this up really quite badly. But I think, what do you think of that finish? Because I'm fine with it. I just kind of wish there was a more elegant solution to this finale, because I don't really like Asuka using the mist here either. Like, I feel like Asuka and Io are being presented as the baby faces, and the mist, I get that sort of it feels like a comeuppance thing for Sasha, but I still don't quite like it.
At this point, we are just, we should just give up trying to get wrestlers to stop spitting at each other. No. They literally just
NXT's
like,
been really bad for it as well.
Gobbing fluids towards other people's faces, like, you know, just spitting in people's open mouths, like that's gross. Even when there isn't a pandemic, and even when you have, we could just go through the entire kind of vomit thing from Robert Stone 2 weeks ago. Look, I didn't think that the ending was too rough. It's just I agree. It's not. It's very main roster. It's very kind of like trying to keep all the plates spinning. And especially if you are presenting this as an event, which, you know, they weren't until obviously Fighter Fest was a thing. But if you are, you know, proclaiming this to be a sort of takeover style match on a takeover style event, I think that would disappoint people. I didn't mind it too much because, like I said, I think this match was so good. I think with a crowd there, this would be, I think, probably have been elevated to best TV match of the year, or certainly within contention, because like Sasha's return to NXT, having a match with Io Shirai, and for all of this to happen with no crowd, it's an absolutely tragic occurrence, because I think people like, and just the pace of this match, at both people going hell for leather, like that brilliant tope, which is just like crushes Sasha Banks like an accordion. Like, we forget how good Sasha is at selling, especially in a big match environment. I think with a crowd, it has everything at an NXT crowd wants, and I think it would have been something truly special. As it stands, it's very good. In terms of the COVID era of wrestling, it's one of the better TV matches I think that they've aired. I really, really liked it. I think it had some probably a bit more fluidity than the actual triple threat with Charlotte. Also, no one got brained in the top of the head, which was nice. But I just think it's just that there's always something missing from no fans wrestling, even, you know, with the piped in studio crowd who are at least wearing masks now. So that's something. But you know, in terms of what we can get, this was almost as good as we can get. And I don't think any amount of kind of, you know, gobby finishes can denigrate the fact that the match was brilliant. Really,
I think this, and it's interesting as well, because I think we wouldn't be getting this without the kind of situation. I think they wouldn't be pushing Sasha Banks into big singles matches without having had to rely on her and Bayley for quite a lot of SmackDown during this period of time, and realizing that they're a really brilliant pairing, more than being just like they you know, they just stuck them together to be like, well, you just work well together. And then I think they've really come into their own during lockdown. And then you've got, yeah, you wouldn't you probably wouldn't have Asuka having risen to where she's risen. Like, you wouldn't have Io Shirai as champion. I think that, like, giving people kind of what they want. And also, yeah, I think also just because literally they'd be on the road, wouldn't they? So you wouldn't even have that ability to be like, well, we're all filming at the Performance Center, so we can just have this match between Sasha and Io. And it's not really like a cost to the company to do that, because we have all the performers in one area for the first time in probably the company's history, like, to just have everyone located in that one, like, just centered around one place every day of the week. So yeah, I think it's fascinating to think that, like, we're kind of just being given dream matches just by sheer luck, really, in the sense of people just happen to be there. So they're just going, oh, chuck them together. And I think this again, that finish with Asuka continues that fit, that idea that they wanted to have more main roster talent on the NXT shows in an attempt to give it a boost. Asuka is obviously the biggest star in the women's division right this moment. I really do think that adds a little ripple of excitement going through the Great American Bash. It made it feel like the pay-per-view event that wasn't just chucked together to be like, well, we're programming against Fyter Fest. You know, that it felt like something that should be a sort of regular part of the NXT calendar. I think next week's will be more interesting to see what happens in the Keith Lee Adam Cole match and how they try to get through that finish, and whether they're just going to go for the straight, like, a very clean finish and have a double champion for a bit, which I think is the right thing to do and the better storyline, whichever guy you pick, or whether they're going to do a sort of Karrion Kross interference and try to keep both belts separated on separate people, which I think suggests that this was never really the plan and has just been thrown together as sort of a bit of excitement to try to siphon viewers away from a certain other company.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Because the rest of the show, I think, didn't have that same feeling as this main event with Sasha and Io. It didn't have that, it didn't grab me. And like a lot of the booking last week when they were announcing all of it, I was like, this doesn't feel like a big deal. You know, last week when they were talking about it, they hadn't announced Io and Sasha on NXT. They had only just sort of vaguely set it up. But we had the announcement of the Women's Fatal 4-Way last week. We had the Rhea Ripley, Robert Stone, and a Leah handicap match. And we also had Dexter Lumis versus Roderick Strong in the strap match announced. I wasn't massively bothered by any of these going in, but I was pleasantly surprised by two of them. One of them was about as good as I thought it was going to be. So the women's Fatal 4-Way kicked off the show, and it was Candice LeRae versus Mia Yim versus Dakota Kai and Tegan Knox in an elimination match to decide the number one contender to Io Shirai. I really liked the balance in this match. I liked the storytelling throughout. It went quite long. It had a really good amount of time in it. And I think an interesting winner was picked. I think Tegan Knox picking up the victory. So it sort of... we started out and everyone sort of ganged up on Candice LeRae and decided they were just going to murder her and get rid of her. So like as much as LeRae and Kai tried to sort of get out of the way, they ended up really being the targets for Yim and Knox, who were working together for a lot of it. So how did it fit? Yeah, that was it. Knox ran into LeRae with a big splash. Kai hit then sort of, Kai was in the corner, so she was going for like a double splash. Kai ran out of the way, then hits this big boot. She catches a big boot off Yim. They double suplex her, and then there's an eat defeat, and LeRae is out of there. I think it was eat defeat or protect connect, one of the two.
I think it's soul food.
Oh,
I think it's the other one.
Food. That's it. I think that's eat defeat, but is it not? Or soul food?
Well, soul food. I mean,
which one is which? They're all just neck moves.
Yeah, it's all a variant. Like what eat defeat is when it's the straight leg with the sole of the foot there. But I actually think soul food, weirdly, is the one where the knee is against the face. It's difficult.
Does that not protect your neck? I don't know. Well, it was a move on her neck, and then she was out. There was a little bit of miscommunication there between Knox and Yim. And Kai got a big roll up and sort of got Yim eliminated. And then you ended up with Knox and Kai, the feud that won't die, to finish off the match, which I thought that's...
I'm not sure what happened there with just while we're on Yim's elimination. Something seemed a little botched there. And I don't know if that's just because there was a little bit of mistiming and so it felt a little underwhelming, or because so Yim hits a code blue on Kai, right? And then I don't think Kai was like knock silly, but like the referee counted the two and then Kai didn't really kick out. It was more like Yim kicking Kai out for her. She Yim just went whoa, but like Kai didn't really do anything. And I don't know if that was just like a mistiming on Kai's part or if it's literally just like I'm inventing it by seeing it. But then there was a slightly awkward crucifix pin that didn't quite work, and then the Akana roll with the bridge, and I don't know, like it's just something I noticed. It seemed like there's something a little off there, but I don't think there was a wrong person pinned or anything like that, just a little moment of weirdness.
NXT loves a crucifix pin recently. They've absolutely been lapping up that stuff. Then we ended up sort of again like the Kai and Knox feud. They were absolutely murdering each other in the break as Shaquille O'Neal, who seemingly is on every advert, was
Shaqaroni.
Yeah, you know, just telling us about a pizza that he's sponsored or whatever. It's really big, apparently. It's got so much pepperoni. That pizza has so much pepperoni on it. It's like every inch of the surface of that pizza is covered in pepperoni. America, you are animals.
Please, everyone, listen to Shaquille O'Neal. Forget about actual Papa John, please. It's weird. I don't like the dual adverts things.
Yeah, I'm not
because
really
during the main event as well. Like there was like we're going to be uninterrupted from advert. Remember, this is brought to you by Mountain Dew. And then also just like randomly at some point, Mara being just like, "Wow, Tope Suicida crushing, just like the Miz's upcoming new show, Cannonball." Mm-hmm. It's like I don't remember this NXT. Things didn't used to be quite as corporate, but like that's griping. It is on a main network now, and that is a promotion for brand, so this kind of stuff is to be expected, I guess.
Well, we were saying that Kai looked like she got knocked silly during that code blue. There was another moment where Kai looked like she got absolutely leathered as well, where Knox went for the reverse cannonball that she does and just chinned her. Like she hit her so hard that Knox came off it going, "Ow, my back has hit one of the points on your body that is very painful." It's like that point was her chin.
Also, right earlier in the match, I think it's Candace and Kai are both on the ring apron, and basically Candace like does like a face buster, but Kai lands wrong. She lands on the corner of the ring apron, so she just absolutely leathers her in the face. Oh. Kai had a rough old time.
Yeah, and then to be at the end of that putting over Tegan Nox, which is I think he's fine. So Nox missed the Shiniest Wizard. Kai goes for a crucifix. She kicks out. Kai transitions directly into the submission that she's been using, but Nox manages to power out. She hits a molly go round and then the Shiniest Wizard, and Nox picks up the victory. So we're going to get Nox versus Io Shirai at some point in the future. That's going to be a good match. I'm excited for that. I think that's also a fresh pairing in NXT. So I think I would have preferred Candice or Kai, I think. Frankly,
I was hoping for Kai, and I thought it was gonna be Kai because am I missing something? Is Raquel Welsh out? Like, I don't know, because for me, the only thing, like, there's a couple of things about this episode of NXT that don't quite sit right, and I think most of it is just like the Great American Bashness, and there's a general level of fakeness going on, which, like, I get it, but like, there's a kind of this, it's a quite a lot of like stuff that makes you just go. About NXT. Generally speaking, a good episode. Like, I've liked this week's episode of NXT, just watching it more than I've liked a lot of episodes of NXT recently. Again, not saying NXT is bad, but the one thing that kind of like I was just like, which normal NXT would probably have a bit more attention to detail with is Rez Raquel Gonzalez, because she is the diesel to Dakota Kai's Shawn Michaels. And there's big stakes in this match, right? Mm-hmm. Why is Raquel Gonzalez not out there?
So they said she was banned from ringside early. Like Mara said on commentary, she was banned from ringside. Anyone was banned from ringside. But it's like, it's a no disqualification match. So what they're going to, if she comes out, what are they going to do? It's perfectly legal for her to, like, she might not be allowed to accompany Kai to the ring, but if she walked out, it doesn't stop the match, her involvement at all. So just break the rules. You're kind of breaking the rules anyway to get involved in the match. So yeah, it does feel a bit odd to have made that pairing so tight, and especially to like, they are building into it that Kai only wins with Gonzalez's help, and Gonzalez really is doing all the heavy lifting. But I don't think this was the place to explore that facet of the relationship. I think you could have had Gonzalez appear, try to get involved in the finish, and then maybe Yim comes out and attacks Gonzalez to sort of distract her, giving Nox enough time to pick up the win. There's a lot to do here. I'm assuming then that Gonzalez couldn't be there, and that's more likely why she wasn't involved in the match, because it feels like a glaring omission.
Explaining away that in commentary as well, like doing it in a backstage segment, because like stuff can get missed in commentary. And like I said, like you said, it doesn't need. Yeah, even if this, like, maybe elimination matches aren't no disqualification, because you can disqualify someone, I get maybe. But, like, surely it's more effective to kind of keep that pairing visually on camera. And then, yeah, just have some like, Mia Yim come out to even the odds or something like that, rather than just have Raquel kind of noticeably absent, because if we're talking about the championship here, it does feel like a wasted opportunity to have Dakota Kai call upon her biggest equalizer.
I still think it was good. I think there were three really good choices for people to take on Io Shirai coming out of this match. I think, like, as much as I like Mia Yim, I think she's had a few opportunities at the championship and doesn't necessarily need one immediately again. I think her feud with Candice LeRae and the Keith Lee, Johnny Gargano thing is something that can bubble away kind of in the background near constantly for them. So, yeah, I think Nox or Kai, and at a push, Candice would have been the best choices here. And so Nox winning, I think I'm very happy with, and I'm pleased to see that match in the future. We then got a little promo segment from Damian Priest, who said that he didn't really understand what kind of a man Cameron Grimes is. Neither do I. He said that you slash my tires, but you won't claim it. You attack me before the match, but you won't own it. Now you have my full attention, and the beating that I'm going to give you is something that will live forever. This was good promo work. I still don't really get what they're doing with Priest. They just like him being a constant presence on TV, but not really going anywhere. He's just sort of stuck.
Doesn't he have a lovely voice, though?
He does have a lovely voice. I think he should be on commentary. He should just narrate it. Maybe it'd be too sensual, actually, if he narrated it, because he's, yeah. Oof. It just melts you, doesn't it? We then saw Sasha and Bayley getting ready. We then had Timothy Thatcher versus Oney Lorcan, a match that I didn't know I wanted until I saw it. This was two dudes just stretching each other out. It was 90% a wrist lock, and I loved it. I don't really know what else to say. Like, I almost wish that it was like this. They had just said, okay, let's just drop the pretense here, and like, we'll book the finish, sure, but why don't we just go out there and actually have a wrestling match and see what happens? Like, a completely unscripted wrestling match, because that is basically what they scripted. Was just, it felt like a very draw. It was like slow going, drawn out wrestling match, punctuated by harsh chops from Oney Lorcan every so often. And there were some really good back and forth here. That most of it was very technical, but there was that one brilliant moment where Thatcher sort of started slapping Oney, and Oney fired up to hit three huge chops. The final one basically turning Thatcher inside out. And then we kind of got the reverse of that later on, where Oney started going for chops and Thatcher catches one and slaps him down and gets him into a hold. And then Oney tries to break out using a fish hook. But as the sort of referee's counting for the fish hook to be broken, that gives Thatcher enough time to sort of maneuver and get himself into the Fujiwara armbar. And that picks him up the victory. But he holds it after the fight, after the referee declares the victory, after Oney taps. So Thatcher is obviously the heel here. But yeah, I thought that was kind of the weird thing about this, is like, all the Thatcher's Thatch can stuff kind of warmed me to Thatcher again. I get that he's the heel because of the Matt Riddle stuff. But yeah, the kind of Thatcher's Thatch can segments, as I was growing to like them week on week, I was sort of like, I actually quite like Thatcher as a character now. And so it was kind of weird when everyone in the crowd was really heavily booing everything he did. Because I was just like, I don't know. I think he's pretty good now.
He's just trying to teach people. He's just trying to teach people how to be a monster like him.
You can't blame him.
I could tell why you really like this match, though, which is because now that I look at this picture, I could see that actually, if you take Oney Lorcan's face and Timothy Thatcher's face and combine them, you get this face on the right. Just something I noticed.
You could do that with about 90% of male wrestlers, I think.
yeah, they all make up either you or Luke. I dug this match. I really did, and I thought one of the great selling points of this week's NXT was its general variety. I think you are right in the sense that a lot of the card felt contrived or last minute or like scrappily put together, but it was a varied card. Like there was comedy jobbers, there was a four-way elimination with some cool spots. Oh, forgot to mention this spot, by the way. That's rad.
Yeah, that was the best bit. For those who haven't seen it yet, that was Mia Yim stepping off of Dakota Kai's back to hit a huge head scissors on Tegan Nox. That was bloody awesome.
Yeah, you got two dads fighting in a car park like this. You have the horniest match that NXT have ever had in the strap match between Dexter Lumis and Roderick Strong. And you've got, the excellent women's main event. And of course, Ryu was there as well. So like the actual variety in this night is really, really enviable. I liked it. It had one of my favorite moments of the night, which is just like, I love it when wrestlers refuse to do an Irish whip. I love it because it doesn't make sense. It's like, of all the rules, of all the moves in wrestling that no one questions, the Irish whip is like the biggest one. When someone just whips you and then you keep running because you feel you have to. So at one point, Thatcher just Irish whips Oney Lorcan, who just stops. He runs and then he just stops, turns around and then latches himself onto Thatcher's head with his gigantic thighs. And I was just like, brilliant. Yeah.
For every time you chip away at the pillars that hold wrestling up, like, it's going to come crumbling down. That's the thing. Like, you break that bit of imaginary physics and you have opened Pandora's box, my friend. And only Lorcan is now, he is to blame if wrestling begins to crumble.
Wow. Of all the matches on the show, I wouldn't expect this one to be the one that you think is ruining wrestling.
Yeah, this is... it's because it's... Yeah, it
killing the business,
it
boy.
It ruins the illusion. So the next we got a promo from Karrion Kross that said, it's not about the time you put in, it's about the time you take away. That's pretty much all I managed to really gather, which was the final line.
Very Bray Wyatt.
It was mumbo jumbo, and it was fine. Like, I really like the way the vignettes look. I really like the presentation of Karrion Kross. I actually think that him talking doesn't do much for me. I think he's better as a silent character. I think he's kind of like, I really like the Scarlett should be the mouthpiece. And I think she should also be the herald, and we should see as little of Karrion Kross as you can possibly manage to keep it kind of like magical. Like, I think that's kind of the best thing to do. Cause
I mean, you just want Scarlett Bordeaux on your screen, just like
constantly. No, I'm thinking about it like in the sort of Bray Wyatt, the Fiend thing, like overexposing the Fiend. Like Bray, the brilliance of having the duality of that character is you've got Bray to do all the talking, and then you still, when he becomes the Fiend, that's still special. And I think Karrion Kross has that kind of mystique about him, and you can keep it really special by doing things like having Scarlett delivering the hourglass, which seemingly has been forgotten about currently. Hopefully that makes a comeback next week, but not during the match, after the match. Has to be after the match. If it happens during the match, and I'm going to say it now, I'm going to call it bad. No matter how good the match is, I'm going to say it's terrible, and I'm angry because, yeah, what's the point? Don't hype things up and stop making decisions all the time. I'm getting bored of NXT just trying to, like, it's becoming like a sitcom. They're just trying to reset to the exact same every week while continually being like, build momentum, build momentum, build momentum, and back to normal.
You don't want them to be the boy that cried wolf. You really, really don't. I really like the vignette. I mean, I get what you mean in that, like, if you're going to do kind of spooky, hokey, like, Bray Wyatt-esque writing, it's probably better coming out of Scarlett because we're just used to her as a talker. I actually thought that Karrion Kross like sold it though, like, and I guess it's kind of it's good to know that he can talk, because I think that's one of those things that kind of fans will always kind of like, you know, if you don't hear them talk, you know, fans just assume that they can't. But I think he's got like a good voice, and it suits the tone of the promo. So the promo also featured footage of Keith Lee, and it also featured footage of Adam Cole. He's definitely ruining the match next week, which is such a I'm with you. I really don't want that to happen. I'm not 100% sure that a double champion is what's needed. I actually think there's enough in NXT to justify, you know, multiple divisions and multiple championships. But you cannot build this up and not deliver it at this point, because then next time you try and counter program against AEW, no one's going to tune in because you've pulled this before. Pull the trigger and deliver on your promise, please. The spectacle.
Have they said when the next takeover is?
No, I don't believe so.
Well, maybe that's looming, because I would suggest doing, if you did the double champion, I would just do it for a short period of time, literally drop it at the next takeover. But I think that's the best way to go. I think pick a double champion, have a double champion for 1 month, 2 months, whatever it is, do your big takeover, have Karrion Kross take the belt there. But I think him interfering in the match is just going to leave people sour. And like you said, it's diminishing returns, isn't it? Because there's only so many times you can keep pulling the rug out from under people and being like, ha-ha, you were fooled again. You thought something was going to happen, but it didn't. And people are just going to be like, well, bugger you, I'm going to watch AEW instead, because at least maybe they might be building something that goes somewhere. I think Karrion Kross is great, is a brilliant character. I just don't want to see it overexposed. I don't want to see it involved in finishes. Like, if next week, if he comes in and ruins that match, I think that's just going to reflect badly on Kross. Like,
oh, hugely, yeah.
People are just going to take that anger and just direct it at him, being like, you stole the finish again.
That will tarnish his character more than any kind of like iffy promos or anything. The fact that he is involved in a really horrible bit of booking, it has a cooling off effect, a significant one.
So you're better off having someone win the double championship. Like, say Keith Lee wins the double championship, he goes up the ramp, holds both belts in the air, and then he's locked in the cross jacket. from behind. And yeah, that closes your show, is Karrion Kross taking down Keith Lee.
There's your heat, like, because yeah, you basically, if you don't steal the match, you can steal the celebration.
Yeah,
then, which is like again, you probably do want to have Keith Lee have his moment, but that is the energy that you can take from us and use that to generate anger for Karrion Kross. Doing that by taking the actual match promised from us will be a lot worse.
Yeah. Talking of a lot worse, Rhea Ripley versus Robert Stone and Aaliyah.
Hey, you show some respect to Robert Stone.
So me,
on his penis.
So me and Andy were talking about this last week, and we just said that, like, this is just booking that does nothing for anybody involved. Like, and I think it was actually funny this time. That they've done something with Robert Stone. I enjoyed the coming out in the boxing gear. I enjoyed him getting ready, putting in his little gum shield, putting on his goggles and getting ready for the match. But I don't think the match itself does anything for anyone involved. It continues to make Robert Stone look like a chump. It doesn't make Rhea Ripley look any better for beating someone who is... She's put in a bin two times already. So it's not like she's overcoming a like renowned wrestler Aaliyah, who gets they take her out, like, dust off the dust every couple of months and then put her in a squash match, and then back in the cupboard she goes. That is Aaliyah's NXT trajectory in a nutshell. And then, yeah, Robert Stone is a man who's been in the bin or been drunk the last few weeks. It's a Pyrrhic victory for Rhea Ripley to win this, because it doesn't do anything for her at all. No. It just smacks of giving her something to do. Because you have to give her something to do, but you haven't had any creative ideas.
And the thing
better though, would have, like, been her actually being in the bloody Robert Stone brand and trying to work out how to be in the Robert Stone brand.
Well, that's it. Like, you, I think generally speaking, like, booking's not that tricky. I think just when you are at a crossroads like this, just go with the option that has more, go with the more narratively interesting option. And the more interesting option here is, Rhea Ripley being in the Robert Stone brand and trying to get out, and maybe coming around to the fact that Robert Stone may be able to try and help her. Like, maybe she starts winning matches based on, like, interference from him that she doesn't want initially, but maybe that's she starts to think, because she said, in an interview way back before the triple threat with Charlotte and Io Shirai, she said, "I don't care anymore. I need that title back. It's everything to me, and I'll do whatever I have to do." And maybe Robert Stone could have been the answer. I just feel like you said earlier, like, reset, right? After this match, we're back to normal. Robert Stone is still a loser. Aaliyah is still a loser. They're both losers, but more so. And Rhea Ripley is pretty good. Not pretty good. She's great, but, like, she is, a dominant babyface. All of the things that went into the match came out of the match, which just gave this whole thing a completely kind of filler placeholder feel. Whereas it's like, NXT's normally so much better at taking a story and adding just a little bit of something extra week until you've built up something that has felt gradual and organic. And this is just sort of like like you say, we've got these three people, so let's just do a thing. I mean, the double prism trap was awesome looking. That is something that generally Rhea can add to kind of her show reel, I guess. But other than that,
she dumped Aaliyah into Robert Stone's balls as well. That happened.
Sure did.
She emasculated him properly this time. Nonsense. I hate it.
And it's also just like, look at him. Like, this isn't Michael Cole, strapping up and getting ready for a match. It's not the coach. Like, yeah, this guy is in better shape than all the people at WrestleTalk combined. Like, he doesn't, like, yeah, they literally had to put stupid, like, laboratory goggles on him to make him look ridiculous, because he's in great shape. I don't know, like, it didn't do anything for me.
I just
bit of fun.
I think the correct choice for this feud would have been to trick Ripley into signing for the Robert Stone brand. Like, that is so much more interesting. There's so much more, like, you can make her the sort of stone cold babyface. Then you can make it about being against sort of the corporate side of WWE, because you've literally got this corporation who's got contractual control over her. And I just think it's a missed opportunity to even set up the match with the like and just sort of skimp out on doing that. Like, what are they going to do with Rhea Ripley now? Like, they're keeping her on the burner until they can do something with Charlotte eventually, right?
People aren't going to tune in because like, oh, I hope Rhea Ripley's on this show because I seem to remember her being quite dominant in her last match. That's not a reason to tune in. A reason to tune in would be, let's see what happens with Rhea being in this company that she doesn't want to be in. That is a reason to tune in next week. The ultimate kind of like, it's hard to be like objective. This is the objectively wrong booking point, but simply put, there's no reason to tune in next week as a result of this match, where there would have been a reason to tune in had it gone a different way, which they actually put there. Like, they actually created that context, that dilemma. So yeah, a bit head scratching.
Then we had Roderick Strong versus Dexter Lumis, which opened with a really cool match.
It's the horniest match I've ever seen. Goodness, they kept using the term strap on, didn't they?
Oh, they did, man. People kept going, strap on, Roddy and Charlie in the crowd.
Dexter likes it.
Do you know what? I really quite enjoyed this match. I thought the promo going into it with Roddy sort of getting hypnotized, like it was like Inception. It was sort of what is that film called? I've forgotten now. My brain's just died this week. It's the Jordan Peele film. I can't remember.
Get Out.
That's it. It reminds me of the like going into the sunken place. And he has all this thing, and then they literally cut that promo into the intro for Roddy as the Shock the System music hits, and Roddy does the dramatic eye open as the sort of sting happens. Comes down and says he's not scared of Lumis. They're trying to put the strap onto Roddy, and he's sort of being like, man, actually, you know what? I don't really want to be strapped in. But he attacks him and goes, look, I'm not even scared. Lumis fights back and forces the strap on. Okay. It's really hard to talk about this match without falling into the same traps that they've fallen into. I think there was some cool stuff here. Like, I think they had some quite inventive uses of the strap. I really enjoyed the just when Lumis was just dragging Roddy around with it. Like, Roddy rolled out of the ring to try and get away, and Lumis just yanked him into the apron multiple times, and Roddy just leapt like a mile into the air to be like, okay, I'm just going to splat myself on the apron then on my own. I thought it was cool. Slow, but cool.
One thing this match had hugely in its favor, and I was kind of like, good NXT, good old traditional NXT, is they didn't do that four corners bollocks where you have to drag your opponent around the ring and touch this corner, go touch that corner. I'm so glad they didn't do that. It's just a simple pinfall job, but you've got a big, horrible leather strap that you can leather each other with. I didn't hate it. Like, strap matches are not my favorite step, just because they are generally a lot more awkward. There's a lot more kind of like admin and physical busy work. We saw that in the finish with like struggling to get the strap around Roddy, and it didn't quite look nice. There were a couple of nice bits. I really liked it when they decapitated Bobby Fish with the strap. Yeah. That looked bloody brilliant.
On his little bicycle. One of my other bit there, and then Lumis also went for his finisher sort of mid-match by trying to put Roddy in a trunk, which I think is definitely his actual finish to a match.
But there's a weird bit of commentary where we just like, oh, imagine getting put in the trunk of a Dodge Viper. That's worse because the trunks are famously small. It's like, what is this? What world am I? It's
very smaller than average. A very strange advert for the Dodge Viper.
Yeah.
You can have it, but you must talk about how limited the trunk space is. That's because the engine is so big or something. I don't know. I know nothing about cars. Again, though, Fish comes out and just attacks Dexter Lumis like he wasn't also kidnapped. I don't know why Roddy's the only one who actually has emotions in the Undisputed Era. This is the issue. It's not even that, like we keep saying that the guys have been gaslighting him about, like, oh, Lumis isn't even there. Nothing has even happened. It's like, Fish was also kidnapped and he's just fine. Yeah. And Roddy, yeah, and Roddy's apparently the coward for being like, well, you know, my job is I'm a wrestler. And so we have wrestling matches. We come to the ring and we have wrestling matches that are booked in order to win championships. Getting kidnapped is not part of the regular existence of a wrestler. So Roddy again, is completely justified in what's happening. And the Undisputed Era are just making him look like a chump for not, for just not, I guess, manning up. I don't know. It's very odd. Yeah, but so Fish comes in to interfere. He gets clotheslined with a strap. They then whip Roddy into Fish on the apron. And then that's when sort of Loomis drags him in for the sit out Uranagi thing. And then his finisher, which is called the Silence now. And it was a bit clumsy. There was a bit too much strap, a bit too difficult to work out how to safely wrap that around another man's neck and not choke him to death. So they, I think they got there. I thought this was good. I assume that's the end of the feud. I don't really know. Where do you go from here with Dexter Lumis? You know, it seemed like they were building something with Velveteen Dream. That is very unlikely now. So what do you do with Lumis from here?
I don't know. I think we are gonna, well, we'll see if he starts talking, because now that obviously I do not think that the tag champions thing with Velveteen Dream is going to happen. Dexter Lumis needs something else to want. And I think that generally comes from, I think, a new feud. I think NXT kind of has a few feuds that it feels like are done after this show, or feel like they maybe should be done, but aren't, like Mia Yim and Candice. For me, feels like it might be done, but you know, with the street fight probably will be the final thing. And this, the whole Dexter Lumis versus the Undisputed Era feels like it's sort of done. I mean, Undisputed Era, like, they've had a difficult time since lockdown started, really, in kind of trying to get a foothold in, like, stuff to do. Because obviously, you don't have Kyle O'Reilly. Roddy and Bobby Fish are doing this weird kind of emotions like storyline, and then Adam Cole is busy elsewhere, and it feels like Adam Cole's time is up, and it feels like UE's time is generally up. So it feels like we are kind of shuffling around a kind of a time of reboot for NXT, but without, like, with, I assume, a SummerSlam takeover around the corner. It's not quite ready to do that yet. So things are just kind of very slowly, gingerly. And maybe after SummerSlam, things can get a little bit more energized and people can go kind of like sparking off in new directions.
Yeah, they've really struggled to do it. They've really struggled to work out what to do with the Undisputed Era when they're not all champions. And, like, you know, that the promise, the fulfilling of that promise to be like on that first show of NXT on USA, to be like, well, we're all champions now, we've got all the gold, that's really cool, it's the Undisputed Era. I just think when that crumbled, that should have been the end. And obviously, like, it crumbled at a time where they couldn't really play out all of the bookings they had lined up. So they've sort of been like, we'll keep Adam Cole because that's quite safe, and we'll do these other bits and bobs, and they've not really worked out what to do with the guys who are funny, but I don't think they're funny in the way they've been packaged recently.
It's very difficult. Like, they're booking against, obviously, like, we don't have to say that they're booking against the odds, because, like, just the situation, like, not being able to have all of the Undisputed Era, like, it's a really, really difficult time. Interest in wrestling is at a genuine, like, rock bottom low. All of the stuff they're doing to try and pop interest feels a little inorganic, and you feel it's not just NXT, by the way. This is you feel it in AEW as well. There's a sharp decrease in kind of that sense of momentum and urgency and storylines playing out. It feels like no one is really willing to do the next big storyline thing, because it's going to get ruined by the fact there are no fans. So it feels like everyone's just sort of shuffling, which is why this kind of winner takes all match is so kind of, it feels like the biggest thing NXT's done since COVID. And, you know,
it's not going to end with a double champion. It's not. That's a fans thing. I think this is the thing. Like, it's a shame that there are no fans, but it's still a TV show and it still needs to make progress. Like we said, it's not a sitcom. It needs to start to have storylines that go somewhere to get people's investment in the product. Because like, yeah, the more it just goes back to ones every time we finish a match and just everyone's allegiances and interests reset and they just pick someone else to have a feud with. Yeah, my interest in it diminishes a little bit because I don't feel like we're going anywhere. I'm not getting excited about who will be the next NXT champion because that's probably going to be decided in 6 months' time. So I might as well just not bother caring until then. I do care, and I want it to be Keith Lee, and I want it to be next week. And like I said earlier in the podcast, I will be very angry if Karrion Kross gets involved before the finish of the match. So then we got actually a prime target for Keith Lee versus Adam Cole, which is a great little package.
Really loved it.
Set up the idea that Adam Cole wins when the chips are down and Keith Lee fails. He loses despite having these really good showings. I think it was a very fair point to point out that, like, you know, Keith Lee's big moments that everyone's talked about, he didn't win in those big moments. He just made the biggest impact. Mm. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And there was a line from Keith Lee saying, Adam Cole, you may be undisputed, but I am unstoppable.
What a line. Loved it.
And then we got Candice and Johnny were being interviewed backstage, and Candice was complaining about the four-way, saying, yeah, it's meant to be a four-way match, but three people teamed up to take me out. But then she just runs off out of the interview, and Johnny starts trying to carry on the interview, saying, like, yeah, and Candice, yeah, it's meant to be a four-way match, and there's three-on-one. And Candice, she's the best, looking off in the distance. I love that. I thought it was really good.
They really like each other.
Yeah, Johnny runs up to sort of get involved in Candice fighting Mia Yim backstage. Swerve is there. Johnny gets in Swerve's face. I feel like that's something that is probably going to happen next week.
Yeah, maybe.
I think they'll just add that in next week. And it was all broken up. We then got the final in-ring bit of the show before the main event, which we've already talked about. We got Legado del Fantasma coming out. Love the music, love the look. He was getting booed for everything he said here, but I kind of agreed with a lot of it.
Oh yeah.
He was saying that Lucha Libre is kind of, you just expect a masked wrestler to be doing flips and stuff, and it's so much more than that. It used to mean something. They're going to build an empire, they're going to do etc etc etc, and everyone's like, boo. It's like, I really agree with that.
There was one bit with the crowd, like, it was just like, people just say about Lucha Libre, yeah, it's just a bunch of dude in masks doing flips, and then a small crowd chant got started. That is Lucha. And it's like, you bastards.
Oh, yeah.
How dismissive of you. It's always nice to see a villain who is in the right but going about it in a objectionable way. That is the most interesting form of villainy.
Yeah, I love this this faction. I think they're brilliant, and I am interested to see what happens when they get past the guy who runs out to confront them, because
stop doing it, Drake. You would literally, I don't believe for a second that him and Breezango had a little chat backstage, being just like, if I go out there, you guys got my back, right? I don't believe that for a second. Drake is just really stupid and decided, like, well, I almost got paralyzed last week, here we go again. Like, at some point, you do stop rooting for a man. You stop rooting for someone who can't stop running into traffic.
A willful idiot. this is the thing. So he comes out with a neck brace on. He takes off the neck brace and then rushes the ring to immediately get double teamed by Mendoza and Wild. It is really, really dumb. And then Escobar takes off some of his gear and gets in his face and says, I told you that no one can touch me, little guy, in which Breezango run out and they get involved. They take out Wilder Mendoza, which leads Santos to bail. And then Fandango cuts a promo pretending he's Damian Priest, just being like, next week, we'll take you on at the Great American Bash. I don't know why he was doing like such a voice. He put on his most serious voice. The man called Fandango, who is a ballroom dancer, put on his most serious voice to challenge the brilliant Legado del Fantasma to a match. I'm excited for the match, though.
Yeah.
Again, I wonder whether they'll have Breezango carry Drake to the victory over Escobar to set up, like, Drake being a legitimate contender for the Cruiserweight Championship. because he's at some point he's got to stop running into the traffic, like you said. He's got to start, you know, waiting and going about it the right way. Wait at the crossroads and wait for the green man. But it's weird that he keeps running at him and expecting
on,
and it's like it's the definition of madness, isn't it, to keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. So yeah, I don't really, I thought the sort of punctuation point of him going through the table felt like the moment to be like, well, you have positioned him as the ultimate underdog now. So now he either needs to get clever and start building into being a legit contender. But then he's just come out immediately with the neck brace on and done exact same thing.
I thought he was going to like have the neck brace on, walk down to the ring, and they were going to be just like take it easy on him because he's got a neck brace and like mock him. And then he would rip the neck brace off and then just get in a little bit of a flurry. Because that at least is some form of a plan. That's different from what he did last week. But instead, he just like being like, well, off this comes at the top of the ramp.
Yeah.
And then just
you didn't injure me as much as you thought, but now I'll give you the opportunity to do it again.
Moron.
He is not coming out well on this. We then got Cameron Grimes backstage talking like Damian Priest as well. He called out Keith Lee and Adam Cole, saying that he's the number one contender. So we'll see where that goes. That is a good first squash match for a double champion, if I ever saw one. If you do a double championship. Just before the main event, they made a couple of matches for next week's show. They said that Drake Maverick and Breezango are going to take on the Garde del Fantasma, and Mia Yim and Candice LeRae are going to settle things next week in a street fight. So that is also added to, obviously, the Adam Cole versus Keith Lee match. I think we'll probably get Johnny versus Swerve. Anything else you can imagine for next week?
It's Mercedes is back.
Mercedes is back.
Mercedes Martinez is making her return to NXT. So I imagine she'll be crushing maybe Casey Catanzaro or something like that.
Wheel out Casey. Here she comes. Not won a match ever.
Happy to be here. Look at her climb the ring post. That's delightful. Ah, she's dead.
She's really flexible. Look.
Puny god.
Oh my lord. Well, that is all of NXT this week. I thought it was
Which is your favorite of these Ryu pitches? I want to know which one, because obviously, like, I'm gonna send all of the he does look like he's in a strap match though, which does kind of taint it for me. I'm just gonna send one of these pitches to each of the guys at WrestleTalk so you can have like something new for your phone background.
I think
that one's mine, the Ryu being inducted into Hall of Fame. I love corgis. What's your favorite type of dog?
Schnauzers. Because they're hypoallergenic, so I can be near them for long periods of time without dying. So that is actually all we have time for NXT. I thought it was a pretty good show. The main event especially was a real standout. It felt very thrown together, as we've said throughout the podcast. It did feel quite chucked in there, but I think a lot of the matches managed to transcend that and become something slightly more. I think the women's fatal four-way was very good. I think Strong versus Dexter Lumis had a bunch going for it, despite the sort of hokey gimmick that they gave it. What did you think, Adam?
It was a fake event. It was not a real event. You lied, WWE. But that hokiness permeates the whole show. There is a feeling of like this has been made with like, you know, Pritt stick and
cynical
and celibate
motivations.
Well, that's the thing. But as a 2 hours, I've enjoyed this 2 hours of NXT more than a lot of NXT. And again, we get accused of being down on NXT quite a bit, but if there's any show that deserves like closer scrutiny than anything else that WWE puts out, it's NXT. I feel like
the highs are so high that the middling isn't good enough for a show that is capable of being the best thing in wrestling.
Like Raw and SmackDown are generally like they're not great in no fans, but Raw and SmackDown actually, for me, haven't felt as much of a shift in quality in the coronavirus wrestling era. This, like, and that's the thing, is like why maybe I am a little down on NXT more often than I should be, is because I feel it with NXT. Because like this show with a crowd, I think I would struggle to have much negative to say outside of the Robert Stone stuff. But I really I really, really feel the lack of crowd with NXT, and it's heartbreaking. And like, there's only so much you can just go, well, yeah, but it's still pretty good, when it's just like, yeah, NXT's in a slump. It is, because NXT has a passionate fan base, and it's earned its passionate fan base, and the passionate fan base isn't there. And right now, a lot of NXT is feeling artificial. There's matches we're excited for, and honest, like, most of the time, the exciting matches we're promised are exciting matches we get, but it's really hard to kind of, it's hard to not walk out of NXT and not feel sad, because you know what it could have been. Raw and SmackDown probably wouldn't have been that great, but like NXT, like, this episode could have been absolutely bananas. And yeah, I'm sad, but yeah, Sasha versus Io was electric, and God bless Ryu Banks, best king of dogs.
Have you ever actually owned a dog, Adam?
No, and that's where a lot of this is coming from, is that I like my dad, but my dad is allergic to dogs. My mum has had a dog, lovely dog, but did not have him when she met my dad. And like, literally the most we ever had growing up was hamsters. Had three of them. They all died after 2 years, because that's what hamsters do.
Did you ever take the hamsters together to try and make a dog?
No, we had... Well, that's how your camera crew have got to do it. The dogs don't look like dogs on film. So we had sequential hamsters. One hamster came along, Pickles, died. Then Mitzi died, and then Pepper died. I've always had it as a kind of mark of achievement. Like, I'll know I've made it when I live in a place where it's a good idea to get a dog. And I want a corgi more than anything in the world. They're the world's cutest dogs. They little gentleman wolves. I love them. Little fluffy boys with their big heart butts. I love them. And I, you know, I wouldn't mind a cat, of course, but no.
But it's not quite as good as a corgi.
No, they won't show you as much love and affection to be such noble boys. And I hate that this is the podcast bit, because I can't show any more pictures of corgis. I mean, I can, like, there's one, but people listening to my voice
for me, and I can also just look away.
No, don't look at him. He's wearing a bow tie. It's delightful.
So we've been in contact with the Greyhounds Trust, and we might be adopting a greyhound at some point in the near future.
Ooh, a sick dog, sick looking dog. I don't get greyhounds. They look like they are a strong breeze away from dying.
Yeah, that's great. I like it. Little quivery ones. They're fun.
Greyhounds are wonderful, noble beasts. But like, you little floof monster. I guess so. Do you have massive allergies? Will your brain explode if you're near an adorable dog?
I think I'll be all right. Like, I don't always. It depends, like, the quantity of dog time and how close they've been to my eyes. So if they've been pretty close to my eyes, then I might die. But I think I kind of get used to it. I think it's just because I don't have a dog. I've never had a dog, so. In the immediate meeting of a dog, my immune system just goes, "What is that?" and attempts to obviously attack me in an attempt to cure me of dog sickness, I guess. Mm. I think that's science. I think that's how it works. But I have met a lot of like, recently saw a friend's puppy that was, she got a little golden King Charles Spaniel.
Oh,
that's a great dog. It is a stunning dog, and it is so nice. His name's Honey. It's brilliant.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. We all need things to shoot for in this life. We all need lifelong goals, and mine is to one day get a corgi, and he will be my best friend, and I will call him the professor, and it will be the happiest time of my life. And 15 unless years later, he'll die.
Unless the corgi dislikes you for some reason,
that would suck,
because that can happen.
Can it?
I think from what I've heard, it's 50-50 with dogs about whether they like you or not.
Yeah, they are very judgmental creatures.
Yeah, the man's best friend thing is just like, if they do like you, they will be your best friend, but they could also be your greatest enemy.
Just from like,
and then you just have to feed them and, you know, keep them in the house and stuff.
I mean, you do strike me more as a cat person, just in the sort of the way that you reserve affection for us, your best friends at WrestleTalk, and how you kind of like, you will just occasionally just leave the room without any kind of, you know, goodbyes or anything, or you will, you know, groom yourself whilst looking us directly in the eye with a superior sneer on your face. Like these are all cat-like qualities.
Mm-hmm. I also run away to die. That's another thing I do. But we haven't got there yet.
And you will eat Ollie if he ever
exactly. Well, I think that's all we got time for.
On
the NXT podcast, because I probably am a cat person more than a dog person, but we'll resolve that at some other point. Thank you very much for listening. You've got the magazine show coming up tomorrow. You've got SmackDown on Saturday, and then we're back on the grind again next week with Raw on Tuesday, etc., etc., etc. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.